What is up, guys? Welcome back to Meeting of Podcast. I'm Andres.
This is RB3.
I'm Sabrina.
And this is the podcast where we talk about your favorite filmmakers and the deeper meaning within their films. And this time we're doing two movies again, back to back, kind of like we did with The Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2. Although I feel like this is a little bit more relevant to the season and a little bit more up my lane, I guess, is what I can say, especially based on Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2. We are doing It Chapter 1 and 2. Notoriously, I am known for being a massive fan of these two movies. And yes, I mean two movies, not just the first one. I love the second one as well. Obviously, not everyone shares that opinion. RB3 has been known to not have that opinion. But my fellow person who loves It Chapter 1 and 2 is here, Sabrina. Thank you for joining me. I'm happy to have you because I need your support against the master debater of RB3.
We're in this together.
I don't mean to be a master debater or anything. But
master debater slash hater, RB3.
That's true. I am a hater for sure.
This is our discussion on It Chapter 1 and 2. We want to get into a little bit of the themes, the storylines. There's a lot inside these films. I mean, they're very long films. I believe the first one is like 220, 230. And the last one is like 255, almost 3 hours long. So there's plenty to talk about when it comes to It Chapter 1 and 2. But let's start with the phenomenon that was It Chapter 1. Obviously, the anticipation of this movie is kind of where I want to start because we have the Cary Fukunaga script, which he's still credited as screenwriter, at least one of the screenwriters in this story, in this movie. So there is a lot there that is Cary Fukunaga, but we didn't have him directing it. We have Andy Muschietti or Andres Muschietti directing the movie. And that kind of changed the vibe quite a bit. I think it changed it tonally quite a bit. But I want to hear your guys' thoughts when you first heard about it becoming a movie and your anticipation for it. And I'll start with you, Sabrina.
Yeah, for anybody who has heard me speak like in any length, basically, I always mentioned that it is one of my favorite books of all time. I read it when I was about like 12 years old. I went through it in like less than a week. I just breezed through it. And that's kind of what inspired me to just fall in love with the genre of horror and just fall in love with writing in general. So that novel and these movies really mean a lot to me. So I was highly anticipating this. I wanted to see something different, like outside of the miniseries, because when I was a kid, the miniseries was actually like, it was good because I didn't have too much to base it off of. It was scary to me because of Tim Curry's Pennywise. But revisiting it as I got older, it does not really hold up well as a film. Tim Curry's amazing, but every other aspect just kind of falls flat to me. So I was really excited because obviously, like, I'm a huge horror fan and, you know, like, people push back on, like, the whole aspect of, like, elevated horror. But I was interested in this idea because what Andy Muschietti did with this, so I didn't know going into it that this was going to be the case, but I had a lot to look forward to because I enjoyed Mama. But I consider It Chapter 1 and 2 to kind of be, like, blockbuster, really great horror at the same time. It's not the blockbuster kind of horror that we think of where it's all these cheap jump scares and things like that. There are those slightly within this, but they're mostly effective. They do build up that tension and it's not a false scare most of the time. But I think this really achieves that in kind of being able to branch out into a wide audience. And that's why It Chapter 1 ended up being as successful as it was, being the highest grossing horror film of all time.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say too, but I'll save my opinion. I want to toss it to RB3. RB3, your anticipation and your first reaction to watching It Chapter 1.
Well, it's funny because my anticipation level was pretty high, not necessarily because of my attachment to it. I have a marginal attachment to it. I've seen the original miniseries. I haven't read the books, but I did one time in college write an essay about the character of Mike in the It books and like how like racial relationships are kind of treated in fantasies, particularly in horror. So I kind of used the Mike character example, even without fully reading it. I just kind of skimmed, you know, through online summaries or whatnot. But that being said, though, I was excited for this movie because I was familiar with the Cary Fukunaga attachment, and you know, frankly, he's one of my favorite directors. We have our meaning of episode of Cary Fukunaga, just from True Detective to The Beast of No Nation, He's always had interesting filmography, and the way he described his IF script was very much Shining influenced, very much, you know, a more of a subversive take on the horror genre. And then Warner Brothers kind of went in a different direction with it. And it even, but it's funny because you could see a lot of what his script was on paper actually be translated to what's on screen, but it's the difference in a direction, right? Like you could kind of see, you could kind of see a way that you could interpret his script and make it a little more artsy farcy, a little more art house, a little more strange. And there's a way that Andy Muschietti interpreted it, and there's a way that the studio interpreted it, that you're right, Sabrina, it does kind of fit into more of a blockbuster aesthetic. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that it banks on 80s nostalgia. 80s nostalgia is kind of like the thing. It was kind of the, for like, you know, no pun intended, the it thing, and especially in 2017, 2018, especially with Stranger Things, right? And there's actually numerous people from Stranger Things in this cast. So it just felt like the right timing, right connection. And, you know, if it successfully, like, capitalized on being both a really good horror movie that's really accessible to a lot of audiences and a really great teen romance, young adult movie. So I think it succeeded by combining all of those aspects together.
Yeah, that's my thing. Obviously, this movie is a phenomenon. It's, I think, still the biggest horror movie ever. 120 million opening weekend. I think it was like $1.17 or close to 120, which is enormous. I mean, that's how much Thor Ragnarok made opening weekend, to kind of put things into perspective. Accessibility. That's the best way to describe It Chapter One. It is so accessible. It is not, we talked about it a little bit with Mark, Sabrina. It is not kind of like offensive horror, if you know what I mean. It's not so gruesome to the point that it kind of has an off-putting vibe to it. It's much more of an accessibility where the themes and the messages and the story is at the forefront of the scares. It's at the forefront of anything and everything Pennywise does. It all relates back to the characters. It's much more a character study on these kids than it is a horror movie, to be honest. And that's why I liked it. I liked that it wasn't just cheap scare after cheap scare after cheap scare. It was more like, what is inside a heart of a kid? What is inside the fears of a kid? What is inside this generation of 1989? And how this town kind of manipulates situations and allows their own feelings to direct kind of where Pennywise goes. I really like that part of the movie. It's probably one of my favorite parts of the entire film, is the idea that Derry is an active participant in Pennywise's evil doings. They almost turn a blind eye to him and whatever he does. But I think that's what made it so cool. Obviously, the depiction of Pennywise is kind of what kind of hit the home run. Everything went viral after that portrayal of Pennywise. So I feel like we should also go there. Let's talk a little bit about Skarsgård's Pennywise. Sabrina, what were your thoughts? Because I feel like this is kind of what did it. When it came to the viral aspect of it, and when it came to the phenomenon aspect of it, Pennywise was kind of the star of the movie.
Yeah, I absolutely loved what I saw on screen, what we saw in the trailers going into it. I think Bill Skarsgård is basically perfect in this role and perfect for this iteration of Pennywise. He's visually terrifying. Obviously, his performance really takes it another level. The things that he's able to do with his voice and his body, his smile, his eyes, he's able to do that on his own. But then obviously, there's also the hair and makeup aspect to it. And this whole, like, gothic old-timey clown, it's something completely different from the vibrant Tim Curry Pennywise that we saw. And like, yeah, it's insane, because the way that they did his hair and makeup, it does make him look a little bit more menacing rather than Tim Curry's. He's able to kind of look a little bit nicer. And I always find it so interesting, because the scenes that are in like broad daylight where he's just being so silly and ridiculous, but he's sitting there biting a kid's arm and waving it to the group, like, oh, it perfectly embodies what you think a menacing, terrifying clown would be, because this is just one version of what it is. Like, it is actually just a celestial being that came into Earth on an asteroid and landed in Derry, Maine, and stayed there until it was habited by the town. And that's why the town has that influence. He's able to like influence the entire town to turn the blind eyes, to kind of ignore everything that's happening. And I just think the character of Pennywise is so interesting because Stephen King almost, I give him some of the credit for like birthing that like fear of clowns, and his story about it is a little interesting because that kind of came after him. And obviously I think it's like he saw like a Ronald McDonald type of clown on an airplane just drinking a ton of booze, and he got inspiration to make Pennywise. Like, he just thought it was an eerie sight to see someone silly and ridiculous doing something very adult. And then obviously to this day, the way that we think of clowns is pretty terrifying. People are off put by them rather than in like the 1960s, 70s, 80s, when that was usual for birthday parties. And we have characters like Terrifier, we have like House of a Thousand Corpses, and then we also have real life clown, killer clowns like John Wayne Gacy. And so that just has this menacing aspect to it. And I just love just what Stephen King did with like birthing Pennywise, and then how they took it to another level with this version of the character. Because he really does embody kind of that celestial being that you know isn't from this realm. And I get it a lot more from him in this film than I do from Tim Curry's Pennywise. So I like that they took it up a notch, because obviously as the years have gone on since the miniseries, we can up visual effects, we can up like the hair and makeup and go crazier and go to new heights. So I really enjoyed that entire aspect of it, because the characterization of Pennywise, like I said, is this like evil clown, and he goes, and when we like think of clowns, it's like childhood innocence, and that's exactly what he basically feeds on, is like innocence and like the naiveness of children and all of that. So it's just perfect. I enjoy this so much.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I think all those reasons that you mentioned, Sabrina, I think it goes, and we're going to talk about it more extensively as we talk about each character, but the fact that it heralds in on such personal fears, you know, the fact that it's such a personalized experience for each individual character, and the fact that it plays on horror that is internal instead of like, you know, just external like jump scares or whatever, I think makes it more, gives it that extra layer of both sophistication and, you know, gives it extra connectivity to the audience.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I mean, do you want to add anything about the Pennywise portrayal?
Yeah, like I think you know, well, just like Sabrina said, like everything with the clown stuff is a sign of changing times, right? Like yeah. You said, Sabrina, there used to be birthday party attractions, and now, you know, everybody's scared of them. Again, part of that I think largely is due to the miniseries. I think a lot of people got really scared by the Tim Curry Pennywise, but I also think. I think a lot of it is also this kind of like discontentment with like the past, right? Like what used to entertain us like before kind of horrifies us now. And I think that's kind of the overall theme that we see across both movies. I think that's what, you know, something that starts as something we could enjoy, or something that we can see, you know, as somebody might have an enjoyable experience with a clown, but then, you know, it could take that one traumatic experience that can end up having a ripple effect throughout your entire life. And I think that's kind of the overall theme of what's going on here, because I personally got scared of clowns through like my own personal trauma. Like, it's when I saw a clown up close. It wasn't when I saw a clown on TV. It's when I saw a clown up close. That's when I got scared. And that's when I was like, I don't know. I don't like these things. But, you know, for some people it's different. I know a lot of people were just scared of clowns just off of seeing them on TV too. So, but I think to me, I think, you know, the whole idea of Pennywise just being like this extra terrestrial, you know, supernatural space clown who could just like embody every single fear that anybody imagines just makes it all the more scary and all the more villainous. So,
yeah, I think a lot of it too, I really want to kind of marinate a little bit more on Bill Skarsgård's performance as Pennywise, because I feel like this is what launched it into superstardom when it came to It Chapter One. Considering RB3, this movie is kind of, it's a creator of a lot of memes. It's a creator of a lot of Halloween costumes. That's kind of what I want to, I know that's not important, but culturally, do it for the culture, as the kids say. Oh, there you go. See? the red balloons, just everything that kind of centered around Pennywise became so popular. I kind of want to talk about his voice, because I think the way, what made his voice so unique is that it changes. It changes dramatically between certain moments, right? Where it's high pitched and then it's very low growl pitched. There's moments where his improv lines are hysterical. There's moments where he's yelling. Like, I think the way Bill does the voice, I think voices are even more iconic necessarily than physical portrayals. I mean, you could talk about Vader. You could talk about other characters that have that classic voice. Even Tim Curry had it with the original Pennywise. But I feel like his voice, the first time we hear him, when he talks to Billy's little brother, what's his name? Georgie. Say it one more time.
Georgie.
Where he portrays, where he specifically talks to him and his voice just does like four different things. I think that's the thing that really nailed it. And the fact that he's a dancing clown, I think also kind of vibed with people, where it's like, yo, sometimes this homie just wants to bust out and dance, just like he does at the very end of the movie, where he just dances for no reason, just to terrify you. He's just like, yo, what's up? And he's just dancing, and it's scary, funny, and weird, and also like, you're off put by it, because you're just like, why are you dancing right now? This is not the right time.
It's the face too. It's like his body's dancing and it's stuck on his face and it's completely melting. So it's that weird off-putting feeling, because you're like, something about this isn't right. Like, this face should not be on this body that's dancing.
Yeah. So I think that's part of it too, where he's like, his introduction is Pennywise the dancing clown, not just Pennywise. So a lot of people kind of latched onto that. But yeah, I mean, the guy, his look is iconic. The makeup, it goes hand in hand with the portrayal. I really do feel like you're right, Sabrina. The makeup is kind of what really, I mean, that enormous forehead. If you see a guy with a forehead that big, you know he's not human and you know he's a monster. but no, for real, like, that giant forehead is really unique and really different, and also just off-putting in so many different ways. Let's move on to the kids, because the portrayal of the kids also kind of elevated this movie quite a bit, considering everyone walked away from it being like, damn, those are good little kid actors, man. What'd you guys think of the kids' portrayals, and who do you think is the standout?
Well, for me, Finn Wolfhard has always been my favorite. Is that his name? Finn Wolfhard?
Finn Wolfhard? Yeah.
Finn Wolfhard. There we go. Yeah. That dude.
He's like bigger than me now.
I know, and he's funny. It's funny because, like, these comedic characters, they could have the potential to go all over the place. It could be really bad. It could not fit, especially in a horror film. You could just feel it be cheesy. But for him, it just felt so natural. It was so funny. Like, that was, to me, honestly, the horror was good. The horror was great, and, you know, had some subtext and all that stuff behind it, but it was really just a comedy with the kids that really had me invested. But he was the best. And when he was later preceded by Bill Hader, it just made all the sense in the world. So
it really did. Sabrina?
Yeah. So I love all of these kids. That's why I love this book so much, is because, like you said earlier, it does have that, like, coming of age aspect. And I think that's the most interesting part. Even as interesting as Pennywise is, it's the children. It's each of them and how rich they are when they're only like 12 years old, and the things that they've gone through. That's the biggest thing. So I'm attached to every single one of them. But in the film, Jack Dylan Grazer as Eddie Kasprak really stood out to me. I absolutely adored him. I thought he was hilarious. I thought he perfectly embodied what this character is. And so I walked out of it loving all of that, and loving their chemistry with Pennywise. Like, these are top tier kid actors. They really went all out. They got an A1 ensemble for this. Like, I can't think of anything like better. And like you said, RB3, Finn Wolfhard, coming off of Stranger Things, doing another one like this, it's just, he fit right in. It was perfect.
Yeah, these kids are all really incredible, all stellar actors in their own right. And they all have incredible moments. If I have to give a shout out to one, I'll choose Beverly. Sophia Lillis?
Yes.
Sophia Lillis. I feel like she's definitely a future star in the making. A current star, to be honest, as a child actor, for sure. But she definitely stands out as Beverly quite a bit. My thing is, I like, let's go straight to tone, because I think a lot of it goes with the kids, a lot of it goes with Pennywise. But you mentioned it, RB3. The fact that this movie is really funny, and obviously we'll talk about It Chapter 2. I think It Chapter 2 is like a full-blown comedy, but this one's really, really funny as well. And I think that is kind of, it might be, it might not be, because I honestly haven't read the Cary Fukunaga script. But I think like that is the main difference between Cary's script and Andy's directing and vision. I really do feel like Andy was like, let's add some little improv jokes here and there and make it a little bit more lively and funny and accessible, versus Cary's might have been a little bit more gritty and darker and a little bit more off-putting. I don't know if you guys agree with that or not, but what do you think about the tone of this movie and the way it's able to balance really heartbreaking emotional scenes and terrifying moments, and at the same time, like, laugh out loud moments, like Ben with New Kids on the Block. He's like, I'm the new kid on the block. Yeah, never mind. That's in the movie, guys, by the way. Yeah. Thoughts?
Yeah, I really honestly applaud them for that, because it's something really difficult, first of all, to adapt any Stephen King work in general, but to be able to balance all these tones with this cast and then kind of know that people are expecting something, like, they're expecting a lot from you, because this is a beloved novel. This is a beloved character in Pennywise. And, like, I don't feel like we get those attachments at all to the children and the adults as much as we do nearly in this one. They succeeded 100%, because we're dealing with heavy, heavy themes. We're dealing with children who have been through traumatic experiences, who have kind of lost their innocence, like, really early on in their life because of things that they've had to deal with throughout their life. And so the fact that they're able to do all that but still have those very lighthearted moments is on, like, the direction, the script, the comedic timing of all of the actors together, and how they genuinely do feel like a group of friends. Like, even as they're all meeting each other, when it's the core group in the beginning and then they go to the rock fight and then they slowly kind of start to band together, like, as we're doing that, it feels very authentic. It feels like exactly when you're a kid and if you were just with a group of friends riding your bike around town, and then you meet somebody else that you, like, went to school with, like a new kid, they just kind of fit right in. Like, you don't really care too much when you're young. And I absolutely adored that entire aspect. It felt real.
I want to push back on that, Sabrina. Did you ever do that? Did you grow up in the generation of, like, riding your bikes around town?
That's all I did until I went to college. Yeah. I would ride my bike miles every single day.
No, I'm saying, like, as a kid, like, were you, like, one of those kids who, like, ride?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I just thought that was, like, my last generation is the last ones to do that. And your generation was, like, riding, like, what do they call it? Hoverboards around or something?
No.
You kids were, like, hoverboarding around and dabbing.
You think I'm, like, 14 years old right now?
Yeah, you're, like, 10, Sabrina. We all know you're 10. RB3, can you back me up on this and tell me that, were you actually riding bikes around town?
I did ride a bike as a kid.
Yeah? Okay, I was going to say, that was me. That was my generation. Yeah. I didn't think you guys did.
But. We'd all gang, like, everybody would just, like, come, like, one person would start down the street and all of us would be, like, that scene in Hot Rod, slowly coming together. Yeah. Like, that's how it was.
Like the Mighty Ducks. Yeah, I did too. I grew up in this kind of vibe where it was definitely like jump on your bike and see what you can do, like literally just BS around town and BS around the neighborhood, and just be stupid and be dumb. That's kind of what I did when I was a kid, for sure. Yeah. So I like that you guys had that same experience, because I definitely thought that you were dabbing and hoverboarding around.
Look at what you think of our generation. Good grief.
That's exactly what I think of your generation, guys. Oh, I'm not joking.
I didn't even have a smartphone. I didn't have a computer until I was like 13, and I didn't have a smartphone until I was like 15 or 16. So
yeah.
All right. So that's a little.
Yeah. But either way, I definitely feel like tonally, RB3, this is where the movie kind of stands out above the rest and really succeeds above the rest, because of the way they're able to handle tones and make it an entertaining movie and not just a horror film. I know there's going to be a lot of debates when it comes to, like, how horror are these films, but it's more of just a good dramatic film filled with comedy, drama, and a little bit of scares. I like the way they're able to balance the tone, but I definitely want to hear what you think.
Well, I think, you know, I think this movie, to me, at the core, this movie is like a coming of age story, you know, and yeah. I think that's what, I think that's where it strived at the best. I think those kind of nostalgic feels, especially, you know, the way it was shot, I applaud Muschietti's way of shooting it, especially those scenes when they're in the river. You could kind of feel like this kind of hazy, very warm aesthetic with the sun beaming, a lot of backlight, gives it that very like 80s nostalgic feel when they're like just all playing together. And using those anamorphic lenses to give it like that kind of like vintage, old school, you know, kind of an 80s look. I mean, they went above and beyond and capturing that old school. It not only felt like an 80s movie, it looked like an 80s movie that was trying to imitate like a 1950s movie, which is, you know, funny enough, that's when 1955 is when it's set in the novel, and then they updated it to 1985. So, but even though, you know, there's still that 30-year cycle of 30-year cycle, 1955 to 1985, that's still kind of underlying 1950s ferment, like racism and all that kind of stuff is still playing a big factor into it too. So that it sets a really great emotional tone with the kids, but also sets a great environmental tone for what the city of Derry, Maine encompasses, and how much evil have been rooted underneath ever since. And you even see, and they even tell the story in the movie, how Pennywise was there during the bombing and firing of a black bar, and how that was one of the first instances of violence in Derry. And see, that just goes to what America has always represented, and that's the kind of cruel evil that's always been within America. So they captured a lot of really deep things, like through this adaptation and even this update of the adaptation. So I think, you know, it works as a great coming of age story. It works as a great social piece. And I also think the horror complements it, like I said before, in a way that isn't necessarily scares for the sake of scares. It scares for emotional stakes and emotional stuff. And much like a musical, right? Like in musicals, we come familiar with musicals as music. The music is expressing an emotion of a character. In this film, it feels like the horror is expressing the fear of one of the characters we're experiencing, and just gives us all that much more connection, understanding of what that character is, what kind of trauma they've endured, and all that such. So
I love that. That's actually my favorite part of the entire film, if I'm being honest. It's the idea that Pennywise breeds and harbors acts of evil, right? And the way they define evil in all these films, I'm talking about both of them, the idea of racism in how Pennywise just like dominates it. Anytime there's racist acts, anytime there's racism around him, anytime there's racist people, Pennywise is present. Pennywise harbors that. Pennywise breathes that. And the way that he's able to rule over that and using that evil act and evil terror to kind of gain more power and gain more juice into his ability. And I really love the way the movies are able to do that when it comes to racism, when it comes to sexual abuse, obviously with Beverly, and just abuse in general, when it comes to an adult over a minor, the way the movies are able to talk about Beverly's storyline and the idea of how these adults engage in abusive behavior towards their children. That's also another there. Pennywise is present. It's the idea of whenever there's an evil act, it just harbors and creates a more juice and more power towards Pennywise. That's actually my favorite part of the entire film, because I was like, wow, it's interesting the way they're able to talk about social themes and evil acts as a way to signify pure evil, because that's what Pennywise is. Pennywise is pure evil, and I really like that aspect.
Yeah, it's that influence he has over the town, since he was there before the town even existed. Even when he's sleeping, it's like, and we'll get to it when we talk about It Chapter Two, but it's like he's, the entire town is decades behind the way that people, like, it feels like RB3 said, it feels like it's the 1950s, it's the 80s. Yes, like racism and everything was still like rampant, but like the way that they speak to each other and act, and even just the opening when we see Georgie go through what he does, and then the old lady just kind of like puts down her shutters and just walks away. It's because Pennywise has that when the bullies are like holding Ben up against like the rail, the car just drives past and we see the little balloon pop up. It's Pennywise's influence over everything, because the way he describes fear is that fear is like a seasoning to him. It makes his food taste better, and his food, it's the humans in like Citizens of Dairy. And so that's why he goes after children, because he feeds on the fear that they have, because they have like this pure, innocent fear. And so that's why I think the Losers Club are so interesting as a group, because all of them have kind of dealt with so much. Obviously, like you said, Beverly, and then Eddie with like the abuse from his mom, who's putting all those like illnesses on him that he doesn't actually have, and creating something very traumatic. And so everybody's dealing with something. Mike, the death of his parents, and all of that. And so it's like they kind of all had to lose that childhood innocence very early on in life. And that's why they don't have the same fear as like a very, very young child, like we see with Georgie. Georgie was still very young and didn't really have any spots. He was like spotless. He was free of all of that kind of trauma. And his experience created Billy's trauma. And then that continues on with the rest of them. And that's why they stand out very differently from the rest of the town, is because they dealt with so much.
Yeah, it really is like Pennywise selected these kids specifically to torment because of their innocence and because of their attitude. The fact that they are not simply going with the status quo, the fact that Billy's trying to break out so much and his parents are trying to shut him down, shows that maybe Pennywise targeted him on purpose. That really is an incredible example of it too. And I really do feel like that stands out quite a bit. And the fact that the way he's able to not only influence the adults, but influence Bowers, the bully, and really kind of drive him insane, to be honest, at the very end of the movie, clearly with the kill them all speech. But the idea that bullying is breeded inside this evil and this insecurity that Bowers has, and that bullying then turns into acts of violence, and those acts of violence then lead to your detriment of life, literally when it comes to Bowers. It really is an incredible example of not necessarily like Derry is under this persecution, which it is, right? Because Derry is the prime example of this. But I feel like Stephen King, what he's trying to say is anything that has this, because Pennywise is supposed to represent evil, right? He's supposed to be this like otherworldly, literally otherworldly embodiment of evil. So if Pennywise is gaining power from this, and if Pennywise is growing off this, it's because it's pure evil. So I really do, I love the way that Stephen King and obviously Andy Muschietti are able to talk about themes of racism, abuse, parental abuse, and say, if you see these types of things, know that it's evil. It's pure evil. There is no gray. There is no in between. It literally comes from the embodiment of darkness and evil. And I just love the idea of that.
And even with the children also, with like kind of like the other themes, which is, you know, like the power of like belief and that strength through unity that they all kind of create within themselves, because all of them are seen as damaged people. They're kind of broken people because of their experiences. But when they all stand together, that's when they're able to, you know, band together and defeat this being that's been there for longer than the planet even existed, way longer than the town even existed. And it's just a few kids that believe that they can do it, and they want to defeat this creature. And through their kind of teamwork, all of these broken people are able to defeat something so much more powerful than them on paper, but they overtake that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that showing that, you know, the way to overcome the fears of life is to just be bigger than them, to overcome them. The fact that you have to stand up to your bullies, the fact that you have to stand up for yourself, I think is a really positive message for young people, even though this movie's not made for young people whatsoever.
Let's talk about that, because I kind of feel like it is. If I'm being honest, I feel like this is the perfect tweener, teenager horror film, right? Where I saw stuff when I was like 12 or 11 or 10 that were like dark, like pitch black, like definitely I shouldn't have been watching, versus this is a little bit more accessible for kids. Am I wrong in saying that? But I really do feel like this is the kind of film, the kind of rated R film that 13-year-olds can kind of enjoy and watch and actually get a really good message out of. Am I wrong in thinking that? Because I really do feel that way.
It's like what I said before with that, like, power of belief and how RB3 continued on, where we said, like, when you believe that you can do something, you're able to overcome that. I think all of those themes are something that it's really accessible to young children to consume. And because you have moments where we are scared and we're allowing ourselves to be scared by what we're seeing visually, but at the end of the day, we're also moved and affected by these characters. And also, let's be real, these kids have been absolutely killing the scene. Like, they've been, like, the kids that are in this film, all of them have gone on to do so much other things, whether, like, it's Shazam or other horrors, like The Turning with Finn Wolfhard, Hansel and Gretel with Sophia Lillis, and then the other one, The Lodge, with the kid who plays Billy. Like, they've gone on to do other things like that, and the It Kids and the Stranger Things kids have actually been a huge phenomenon for, like, middle schoolers and junior high kids.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Does this film, just to answer my question, Sabrina, do you feel like because of that, middle schoolers, 13-year-olds, I guess, for a better word, can watch this film? Is this kind of if I'm being honest, if I'm an adult, right, if I'm a parent, and I say, if I think back to my childhood and I say, what kind of rated R movies did my parents allow me to watch? This would kind of be one of them, right? I feel like this is kind of the perfect example of, like, hey, I know this is edgy and creepy, but it has good lessons that are kind of targeted towards kids with the cast and with the themes that they're kind of confronting, right?
Yeah, it's genuinely an entertaining horror film, and you're moved so much. So even though it is rated R, I do believe that a lot of parents, like, actually went with their kids to see this, because the fan base behind this, the people that are really going hard and making fan cams and things like that in social media, were a lot of middle schoolers and junior high kids. One of my friends is a teacher, and when this film came out, all her students were just obsessed with everything about it, which I think is so crazy, because I would have never imagined it, like, when I was a fan of it when I was, like, 12, to become as as successful and powerful to kids. Like, a lot of kids really attach themselves to this. And because it has moments where it is really funny and really warm and sincere, I think that's what they get attached to the most. They get attached to the kids in this story. So, yeah, I do believe that, like, if you're, like, anywhere between 11 to 14, that's, like, that sweet spot where this is the perfect horror for you. Because I was watching stuff like The Exorcist and things like that when
I was
that age.
I was watching some wild stuff. Yeah. I feel like this is, like, that perfect amount of edginess and bloodiness to where, like, a 12-year-old can be like, ooh, whoa, look at that. Oh, my God, it's scary. And at the same time, actually get a lesson out of it and actually get some themes out of it. What do you think, RB3?
I'll be has
RB3 is a strict dad. He's like, son, you cannot watch those films in my house.
Nah. But I will show my kid this before an Exorcist, for sure. Like or a lot of other horror films. I think it is a little more commercial. I think that's why it was so successful, was the fact that it was so commercial. And you know, commerciality is accessibility. So I definitely think it would work for younger audiences, for sure. Would I show a 12 or 13-year-old? Yeah, maybe if they're mature enough. But yeah, I mean, it is pretty bloody, and so I don't know. So
yeah, it is.
Just in general, with the themes, it's pretty dark.
Yeah,
it is. But I really do feel like this is that balance of, like, a kid rebelling and thinking that they're, you know, doing something crazy and edgy, but at the same time, it's just not that.
I wouldn't want to show a young daughter who might be experiencing a lot of the anxiety that Beverly is experiencing in this movie. I wouldn't want to experience that with during that time period. Cause we could and have a conversation about it, but I think that would also be a thing too. If you're to show it to younger audiences, you have to have a lot of conversations about a lot of things. You know, you have to have conversations about race. You have to have conversations about gender, sexuality.
But isn't that a good thing?
It's a good thing. I think it is a good thing. I think, you know, you should be having those conversations. But I think especially if you get to part two, I think part two might, some of the themes in there might go over some kids' heads. But, you know, there'd be a lot to talk about there.
I agree. Obviously, we'll speak more on it when it gets to the second one. I do agree the second one isn't as probably like childhood friendly. I just think there's less for them to latch on to with that one, because it is a more adult and a little heavier in that way. But this is still very heavy and very dark, and I feel like it's a nice introduction to a lot of topics that people don't get to experience themselves, and they can see, or if they're young and they have heard about these types of things or experienced it in any way, then they can know that it's wrong. Because if you don't talk about those types of things with younger people, they don't know a lot of the times. And that's where education comes in, because a lot of people don't have healthy like sex education in schools, and so a lot of the times they don't know about these types of things. So it's stuff like this in art and entertainment is kind of where a lot of people learn about all this stuff. So
that's why I really, really like it. And that's why I low-key love it, because I like the idea of, like you said, Sabrina, education, calling things out, naming things. Because I feel like that's even a theme inside the movie, the knowledge of knowing what Pennywise is. Obviously, in chapter two, when Mike says, "I know what you are, therefore you can't scare me," is one of the lines in the film. And I love that line because it's talking about education and knowledge allows me to confront my fears because I know what it is. I can define it. I can label it. And labeling social themes like racism as evil, abuse as evil, bullying as evil, just evil, no holds barred, and not kind of tiptoeing around it is beautiful to me. I really feel like that's one of the best ways to show a younger person, a 13, 14 year old, these kind of themes, these mature themes, is saying, hey, look at what this demonic clown latches onto and why he latches onto this. Is something that, you know, if I'm a teenager, I can kind of start to debate in my head and be like, man, I've never thought about it like that, and start to think about these deeper, more complicated themes. So that's honestly one of the reasons why I adore these films. It chapter one and two, but It chapter one is specifically towards a more teenage audience.
No, I 100% agree. I absolutely, when this film came out, I think I saw it in theaters about 7 times. I was just blown away by the fact that they were able to adapt this section of the story. And I love what they did, because obviously the novel just goes back and forth between the time periods, but I loved separating it for that exact reason. I love separating it into like, okay, this is the children's story, then this is them when they're adults 27 years later. It really does highlight the fact of Pennywise's cycle. We're seeing the exact same characters a whole 27 years later. It's really interesting to think about. And I like the fact that they don't go back and forth throughout both of these movies, and they section it off this specific way.
Yeah. Obviously, there's so much in this film. It's a 2.5-hour film. The third act of the film, I can't lie, is really effective to me when it comes to, like you said, Sabrina, all the kids kind of coming together and confronting Pennywise and yelling at Pennywise and being like, hey, you can't scare me. I know what you are. Is a powerful moment. It really is, especially when it comes to Billy's storyline. Any memorable moments or lines or scenes or scares in this movie you want to give a shout out before we go to break?
The one that like made me laugh so hard every single time is like it's gazebos, and he tosses it in the pill on the ground. That one's so funny.
Gazebos.
And
it's
gazebos, and because the girl told him it's placebos. I thought that was hilarious. And just the ending, I was really, really affected by Bill, his entire arc as well, because with his brother, what he had to deal with Georgie, and then at the end, basically having to kill Georgie because he understands that it's not Georgie. But that is very, very tough and difficult. Like, these kids showcase how strong they are throughout this entire thing, and that was a moment that like hurt my heart the first time I saw it. It hurts me every single time I watch it. But yeah,
absolutely. RB3.
I'm having a hard time thinking of like specific like quotes and moments. I mean, I do particularly love any time that Eddie was super afraid about something, and then I think particularly going into that house that they went to check out. Super beat up
great scene.
Yeah. But he actually ended up being the smart one in that situation. So Or I mean, actually, not really.
He had the broken arm. He was
Can you talk
about Pennywise coming out of that refrigerator?
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah. That was going to be my moment, to be honest, Sabrina. You stole it from me, so thank you. No, yeah. I just love the moment where it's just the build up to it, where he comes out of the fridge, and then he says one of my favorite lines, and obviously it's like the theme in the movie. He's like, "Time to float." And he starts doing a little dance. It's so cool. It's so funny. And obviously he starts mocking Billy. And also in that very same scene, it's another one of my favorite lines when Pennywise hears Billy say, it's not real, whatever, just ignore it. You know, it's nothing. If we don't believe it, it's not going to hurt us. Mm-hmm. And then Pennywise is like, this isn't real enough for you, Billy. Which is another one of my favorite lines in the film. But yeah. There's so many funny lines that Pennywise says, and the way his voice says it. The opening popcorn line, "You like popcorn, right, Georgie?" Is another incredible line. There's so many. I really love this film. It really has a lot of classic moments and scenes and scares. I think the scariest one as like a scare, even though I don't think I ever really felt terrified, but it really is an interesting way they did it, was the projector scene.
Oh yeah, that was my favorite scare of the entire movie.
That's a great one. That's my really well directed, really well done. Yeah. It's probably the most effective one in the whole film, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely.
Shout out to Ben writing poems, new kid on the block. Yeah. I know how it feels, Ben. I was gonna say, if you guys were a kid, who would you guys be?
I'll probably be Ben, honestly.
Yeah. Ben?
Yeah. I would probably be like a mixture of like Beverly and Richie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I would be the Kylo Ren kid. You know, that kid looks just like freaking Adam Driver, the bully. He looks like a teenage version of Adam Driver, right?
Yeah, I guess.
No, it's spot on. You have to look at that kid. That
I
kid
gotta rewatch. Exciting. I gotta look really at that.
Funny. No, I'd definitely be Ben.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't. You'd be Bill. You'd be Bill.
Bill?
Be
Bill. Billy? Yeah, you're right. Billy. You're right. Yeah. I'd be Billy. Yeah. Alrighty, guys, we're gonna go to break. After the break, we're gonna get into It Chapter 2. So make sure you guys stick around because we have plenty to say about that.
This ain't funny, so don't you dare laugh. With the 450 to buy you in half. You getting at me equals a club half. You do the math, take you out the
equation. Check out this snippet from our review of The Trial of the Chicago 7. Available exclusively on First Cut. Enjoy. Also, I do want to say this. I love Ben Goddard. He totally ruined this movie for me this morning on SCN. Completely, because he showed me a number of videos of like the Sorkinisms like repeated, and what it was like a bunch of lines from this movie appeared in other Sorkin stuff.
The point is that sexual revolution tends to get in the way of actual revolution.
I don't have time for cultural revolution. It distracts from actual revolution.
Really, I'm bewitched. I'm ensorcelled.
You don't send a woman to ensorcel me.
Thank you.
Shut up.
Thank you.
Shut up.
I represent the government of the United States without passion or prejudice.
But I represent the people without passion or prejudice.
You think I have contempt for my government?
You have contempt for your government.
Harry, if I do, it ain't nothing compared to the contempt my government has for me.
I'll tell you, Mr. Schultz, it's nothing compared to the contempt my government has for me.
I got eaten by Abby Hoffman and Jerry Rubin and the Yippies.
Hoffman and Rubin were a lot more charismatic.
So my problem is that for the next 50 years, when people think of progressive politics, they're going to think of you.
That's how the progressive movement would be painted for the next 40 years.
Passing out daisies to soldiers and trying to levitate the Pentagon.
People passing out daisies to soldiers and trying to levitate the Pentagon.
Do you know why the French only eat one egg for breakfast?
You know why they only eat one egg for breakfast in France?
Why?
Because in France, one egg is enough.
Because in France, one egg is enough.
Check out our new website on geeksofcolor.co/first-cut. To check out our reviews, our videos, and articles that pertain to everything First Cut related. Check it out.
Come along, children. Now we're going to have a little music.
What's up, guys? We're back talking about It Chapter 1 and 2. Now we're going to get into It Chapter 2. This is a film that is a little bit more divisive, a lot more divisive, I think I'll say, based off Rotten Tomatoes scores and based off podcasts that I'd listened to. But I can't lie, I walked out of this theater and I was kind of on the top of the moon. I loved it. And then I put on one of my favorite podcasts and they started talking about it and they were bashing the crap out of the movie. I think it's hysterical how I felt like I was the only one who really enjoyed it. It's very different. It's obviously it's a 3-hour film starring James McAvoy, Jessica Chastain, Bill Hader. Great cast. Like, there's no denying it's a great cast. What were your thoughts on this film, Sabrina? And how do you feel like it stacks up against the first?
So I definitely feel like the first one was a lot tighter of a film just in general and a lot better of a film. As much as I love It Chapter 2, I'm not going to lie, the first one is far superior. But I loved how they decided to continue on the story. I loved everything that they did from the casting to the certain kind of story they told. It does get a little bloated and it does feel like very dense, but I mean, they're adapting this huge, huge, huge novel. They have so much to fit in. There's so much they didn't include, which is completely fine. As long as the story's cohesive, I don't care about skipping out on the turtle Maturin, who's like the arch nemesis of Pennywise. Like, I'm okay with all that kind of stuff. They have a few little Easter eggs sprinkled in. That's all fine. But what really stood out, yeah, was the performances, and the standout was Bill Hader as Richie. I tweeted it before it was announced. I swear I will pin the tweet on my profile. I said, because I thought of the character in the novel, like, he's really great at impressions. I've been a fan of Bill Hader since I was, like, 10 years old. I absolutely love the man. And so to see him, like, next to Jessica Chastain and James McAvoy and give the best performance out of the bunch, in my opinion. Obviously, this is purely biased. But to see him do that on film, because he never really gets to star in any movies. Like, I loved him in Skeleton Twins and things like that, and obviously all the comedies that he's done. But this was a mixture of everything that I feel like he succeeds at. A lot of comedy. This, like RB3 said, this is heavy on the comedy. And then when we start this film, it's just like we said earlier, it starts with homophobia in the town of Maine. So that's another thing that obviously it happens in the novel, but the way they portrayed it, because obviously they're changing the years to be like present day, and it sounds like something that would have happened in like the 70s, 80s, or 90s. And so it further shows how far that town is from like being like progressing at all. Like, they're going so slowly, and it's because of Pennywise like reign on the town and his thing. So starting off with that point, I absolutely love that scene because it is so tragic, so heartbreaking. And I think they just portrayed it very, very well. But yeah, there's a lot to love, and then there's a lot I could definitely pick on about this movie. But at the end of the day, I will say I've watched it so many times and I still love it.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, there was a lot of controversy regarding that scene. I believe a lot of people didn't really care for it. I did, because again, it kind of goes hand in hand with the themes of the film and with the themes of what Pennywise is. He is the embodiment of evil, and homophobia is evil. And it's that idea of these acts of hate crimes being a part of Pennywise's script, part of his plan, part of what he is identified with, part of his power, actually. I mean, he gains power from it. I love that because, again, it defines it. It classifies it as evil.
That's what this is supposed to do. It's supposed to make us uncomfortable by what we see the people in the town. That's the whole point.
Yeah, which is why I really love that opening, like you, Sabrina, because I really did feel like, oh, this is another example of what Pennywise does with hate crimes and with this kind of vitriol that comes from people, and that it comes from people nowadays in 2020 or in 2019, like in our current year, we still face a lot of people who hate, like hardcore hate. I grew up in the South. I mean, I grew up in Texas and Arizona, so I know a lot of people who really did have these thoughts and really did want to beat people up and stuff like that. It really is, or at least, I mean, when I went to high school like that, I don't know if you have the same opinion, RB3, but I feel like defining it kind of, it goes a long way.
Yeah, I mean, well, not just about the homophobia aspect of it, but the overall theme of toxic masculinity as a general theme, right? Like,
yeah.
We see it in Beverly's husband kind of exhibiting the same abusive traits as her father was. Yeah. We see that with obviously Bill Hader's character dealing with his, you know, his own sexuality. And, you know, I feel like the part with the giant
Paul Bunyan
thing was like a perfect example of like Pennywise trying to taunt like the idea of like the masculine man and pin that against him and some sort of homophobic trait. And then with Eddie, his fear, living in this life of fear, literally ended up marrying somebody who looks exactly like his mother. Yeah. Is crazy. I mean, that's just what this, you know, every single thing kind of comes down to the kind of broken nature that kind of comes with having, you know, this kind of built-in trauma underneath them all. So I definitely think the themes are good, but, you know, I don't enjoy the movie. I didn't get to say that yet, but I definitely don't enjoy this movie. I don't think it's well made at all. I think the editing is atrocious. And scene to scene, and also like from shot to shot, I think like, dang, they can't like hold the camera still for like 2 seconds without cutting away from something. So it was a little weird, but, you know, I also felt like it was repetitive too. But that being said though, I'm more than happy to, celebrate with you guys, the deeper meanings of this film. So
RB3 is trying so hard to not, bail on the podcast.
No, I'm here.
I'll stick around, guys. But yeah, I mean, I did feel like it was a little long, and I did feel like, you know, it could have been a bit shorter. They definitely did a lot of like, hey, each character has to go on their own flashback mission.
Yeah.
Where they have to turn.
I love the children in the first one. Here's some more of the children. We have to save them.
It's like they had to go on their own flashback mission. They had to go on their own mission, and then they had to find the clue.
The final
to
mission.
Get them. Yeah, yeah. It's like, dog, come on, man. Like, stop. Don't give me this for 8 characters. Like,
to be honest, I liked it. I was in for the ride. I was in for each and every one of the characters. I felt like, hey, if we get more story from them, so be it. I know that Andy wanted this to be, I think he wanted it to be like a short series or a mini series. So I think that's why it's such a long movie. And I think each one would have been like a mini series. But to be honest, I like these characters, and I like seeing the idea of traumatic PTSD, basically, that these kids are facing as adults now. And the scars that Pennywise left behind, like you said, RB3, the idea that Eddie hasn't moved on. The idea that Richie is still the same little kid he was before. The idea that Ben is still incredibly insecure, no matter how much money he has, or no matter how many, like Pennywise says, no matter how many sit-ups you do, he's still the same, you know, Ben. And it's that idea of not getting over your traumas and your fears, and not confronting your fears as adults. What do you think of that, Sabrina? Yeah, I was going to toss it to you. Yeah.
As they move on with their lives, and each of them kind of stay away from Derry, obviously the only person, supposed to be historian, which kind of goes to Ben a little bit in the first film, but it goes back to Mike. He stays, he becomes the librarian, he stays in the town, he remembers everything. He remembers the pact. The rest of them have the scar on their hands, and it, like, they're kind of surprised when they see it, and they're surprised when they hear Mike's voice, because Pennywise like plays with memory. They left the town and they completely forgot about this. They have this entire gap in their memory. So it's almost like they never had to confront their trauma. So that's why they continue in this loop of their trauma. That's why Eddie ends up his idea of love is like smothering. It's the exact actress as his mom. It's the same actress who plays his mom in the first one, which I thought was hilarious. And she's talking to him the exact same way as his mom did in the first one. It's that smothering aspect. That's what he believes that love is. And for Bev, it's that toxic masculinity, like RB3 said, and the abuse that she endured as a child is the same thing that she's getting from her current husband, because they never had to deal with the traumatic experiences because their memory kind of forgot it, but it was still inside. It was still there. They still had the scars, but they never dealt with it. So they all continue to. So the second that they get this call, Mike is obviously the one that recruits them, and they go back to the town, and it basically floods in. As they see each other, more continues to come in. They remember more and more. And it's interesting, their dynamic when they all get together. Like I said in the first one about them genuinely feeling like friends, like you could see on screen the chemistry. It's the same thing with this cast. I would have never thought like we'd have like the Old Spice guy and Bill Hader and Jessica Chastain all in a film together having this amazing chemistry. You could tell they legit look like they're having a blast. And one of my favorite scenes in the book is like the Chinese restaurant scene. And that was incredible in this one. There's hilarious parts. They're all just riffing back and forth. And then when it does start to turn scary, and obviously we have the very, very, very heartbreaking death of Stanley, who obviously we could tell in the first one is kind of like just the weakest character, and he's very aware of it. He's the most afraid. He's kind of the one holding them back in certain moments. He believes that that is the key for them to further on, is for him to not be the weakest link anymore. And it is so sad. It is so heartbreaking. But they don't even remember him for a little bit. They have like the empty chair, and then they're like, oh, Stanley, this, that. Like, it's just interesting how he plays with memory and how they kind of deal with the theme of memory throughout this film, and how that's how none of them have kind of moved on and grown past who they were as a child, even though each of them were successful in their own way. You know, Beverly has a fashion line. Bill Hader's a famous like stand-up comic. Bill's a writer, like a famous writer. His screenplay is being made into a film at the start of it. They're still dealing with all of that, and that kind of what is like holding them back emotionally.
Yeah, it's the idea of post-traumatic stress disorder, right? It's the idea of trauma. It's the idea of burying your trauma, your fears, your past, your moments in life that scarred you, and trying to forget and suppress without actually growing and learning from it. Or confronting it. I mean, the themes are beautiful to me. That's why I really enjoy this film. I really do see past the poor editing and the quick cutting. But I feel like the themes just stand out a bit more, if I'm being honest. And I think it's hysterical. I think Bill Hader is hysterical. I think the guy who plays Eddie is crazy, wild, and funny. He's always at 100. He's never at like 50%. Like he gets stabbed in the cheek and he's still doing one-liners. He's like, dude, cut your mullet, it's fucking 2019. It's still like the funniest line. Like, he's like, dude, it's not fucking 1985 anymore. It's a crazy funny line, and he's doing it as he's getting stabbed in the cheek. Like, shit like that to me is so funny, and it's so creative to be able to tackle all these themes and still have like really memorable one-liners. But yeah, I really enjoyed the second one for sure.
Well, was it funny too when in Miss Scare, one of the zombie ladies like opened their mouth and like puked all over Bill Hader?
It was weird, but I kind of liked the oddness of it. Just the fact that there's like this weird vomit scene, and I'm just like, yeah, why not? Well, like, just go for it.
And yeah, and that's the thing is like, you know, they're afraid of it. James Ransone, who plays Eddie, he's there reliving this like traumatic experience as they go on with it, which I do understand. It does get repetitive, and they're definitely putting a lot of child stuff into it for the fact that everybody really attached themselves to the children, and that part was really successful. They wanted to continue that on in this film, and that's why we have this long runtime. But I think there's so many great moments. It definitely outweighs like the scenes that I don't really care for, which is a lot of that repetitive stuff with Pennywise and the children and them having to get their items. I feel like that could have just happened a little bit faster. And then also, again, having like poor Mike, he's sidelined in the first one. He's supposed to be this historian. They finally do make him the historian, but then he like tricks them into coming back, so they get mad at him. And then as they're fighting Pennywise in the third act, again, he knows the truth that this didn't work in the past, and the group gets mad at him again. And that's kind of, obviously, it adds a lot to have like a conflict in there, because they are supposed to be like unified, and they're going through something that they realize that they were kind of like bamboozled into. He didn't tell them the full truth about it, and they're putting themselves into a very dangerous situation, especially as adults who haven't confronted their traumas. So they almost like aren't as strong as they were when they were kids, and they have to quickly become that. They have to quickly get to that level again.
But I kind of like that. I like the idea that they're struggling, and that the fact that even though they're older, they're more immature and they're more divided than ever. It's almost as if their age kind of gave them more division, and they make themselves see their differences more than their similarities, which is so true when it comes to adults trying to separate themselves from other people and try to be a little bit more like superior towards them. I think that's very relevant. And I really like, you're right about Mike, but I really feel like it comes full circle at the end, especially with the letter and especially with the call he has with Bill. It really is a powerful moment to me. I mean, even like the last line he says to Bill, I love it because it's such a, I don't know if you've rewatched it recently. I just saw it last night, so it's fresh in my head. But there's like a 20-second delay before he's like, hey, Bill. And he's like, yeah, man. I love you, man. And I'm just like, man, I felt that. I was like, shit, that's real. And I was like, yo, I felt that. And I was like, that's a great moment for him. And obviously the letter of Stanley talking about being united, talking about what it means to face down Pennywise, to be brave, to be true, to be yourself. I think those are all really good moments, and it comes full circle at the end. And I think, I don't know, I like the third act. I like giant spider Pennywise just laughing at them and them trying to fight back and realizing that, I mean, it's true, I do. And realizing that if they really come together and define what Pennywise is, they can kill him. I love that.
By the end, I feel like all the moments that we kind of went into different directions and we didn't know where we were going, I feel like the end really does tie everything, mostly everything up with a nice little bow. And of course we have everybody confronting their traumas and like moving past it. We have Richie confronting his homosexuality or his sexuality in general, whatever it is. That we got glimpses of when he was a kid. We got those flashbacks, which I think flashbacks like that were essential. Like, I loved those. It was repetitive, but I really, really loved that. And then having, Stanley's letter and all of them kind of like the shots back and forth to all of them now, and having Beverly and Ben be together.
I love that scene. I love the Ben being buried and Beverly being buried in blood. Scene
so cheesy, but like,
oh, I'm a sucker for it. Are you kidding me? I was like, bro, he's like, your hair is like fire in my heart, Beverly.
Your hair is winter fire.
Yeah, that
very embers. My heart burns there too. It's like, boy has not written another poem in 20 years. He's still
why change something that works though? If it works, why change it, right?
You know what's my absolute favorite scene, and something that still, like, I will go on YouTube and look up every so often just to see how incredible it was, the entire body performance. Bill Hader, in the third act when he's like, yippee-ki-yay, mother, and then the deadlights hit him, and his body falls, and his mouth, like, hangs open. Oh, my gosh. That's what I was talking about in the beginning. Bill Hader knocked this out of the park. I know I'm a number one like Bill Hader stan.
Yeah, but you are.
This was an awesome performance, and all of them had really, really great chemistry, genuinely. Like, they felt like they were friends.
Well, if I'm being honest, like, I love the weirdness of this film. It's a weird film. Like, RB3 is definitely right. Like, it's definitely not a film that has a lot of scenes that make a lot of sense sometimes. But like, for example, the door scene is so funny to me. Like, it's a funny scene. Like, it's genuinely just pure comedy, right? Where it doesn't make any sense as far as like why Pennywise is doing this, but it's just for fun and funny. The fact that he's like, dude, he's fucking with us. Let's go to Not Scary at All. I'm telling you, man. And they do that, and they're like, all right, let's try not scary, because that's gonna be better. And then the little dog is there, and they're like, oh, I'm not falling for this. I'm not falling for you, little dog. You know, little demon dog. And then after a minute, they're like, well, I mean, he's kind of cute though. I mean, yeah. He's a good boy. He's a good dog.
and like with Richie, like the song, like where he's like, I know your secret. It's just like, it's so insane, and it's zany, but that's exactly what this story is. Like, this story is so ridiculous, especially when you think about this crazy god turtle and everything. This was the best way you can adapt this entire story. I think they left out really good parts because they left out the spouses, because Bill's spouse and Beverly's spouse, like, come, and then Pennywise, like, basically kills both of them, but then Bill brings back his wife, whatever. I think they left out enough to really focus on the important parts of the story, even though they did add so much. But I just love how ridiculous it is. It is so fun. It is so entertaining.
It is so funny.
It's hilarious. Like, it's just like the Angel of the Morning, like, playing is just nuts. I was just, I still don't know how to feel about a lot of it. But by the end of it, I enjoyed this entire ride that I kind of went on with everybody. And then going again to what I said about Bill, what he had to deal with at the end of the first one, the fact that this film too, ooh, they are so, James McAvoy did amazing, but Bill is such, it's such a heartbreaking thing because what he dealt with in the first film, thinking he's responsible for Georgie's death. And then throughout this entire time, he gets an exact like reflection of a character that's like Georgie. And then he's with him about to prevent his death and it doesn't happen. And then he has that scene with himself as a child in that basement, that flooded basement, and he's confronting himself and he's like, it's not your fault. All you did was pretend to be sick like one day. It's not your fault that this happened. Yeah. And then he has to basically like shoot himself too in the head. Like, they just did Bill so dirty. They did everybody so dirty.
I loved it. I thought that was a great scene.
It's like, it really like hits me so hard. I mean,
when at the end, when Richie's crying, when he's realizing how he felt about Eddie, and when he realizes what he losses, and when he realizes who he is, that's a great moment. That's a really heartfelt moment.
It's so good. And then when they're back in like that little like creek or pond or lake.
Yeah,
or
that scene. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The fact that they're back there like as adults, but it's like minus two of them. But the growth that happens from that point till then is something that really is beautiful, and their entire bond and their relationship and dynamic. And then also something that I did really enjoy is like seeing older Pennywise in the reflection that Beverly gets, when she goes back to her old house.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he's kind of like,
when he's ripping off his face.
Yeah. That was probably the scariest moment to me.
Yeah. Yeah, those are all great moments. Obviously, Beverly has a lot to deal with in this film. I love the connection she has with Ben. Go ahead, RB3.
I like the moment when she gets scared by the old lady.
Yeah.
I like that part.
That's terrifying. The way that old lady moves in the back is incredible. I wrote down some of my favorite lines and moments to kind of close out. I definitely want to give you guys a chance to jump in. There's so many comedic lines. Obviously, I was talking about the scary, not scary door scene. But my favorite part of that scene is at the end when Richie is like, he's like, next time, let's just try scary. And Eddie's like, next time. As if there's going to be another moment where Pennywise is going to take him down a maze or something. That's one of my favorite lines. But my actual favorite line is when they're going back to the house and Bill is like, you know what? I think Richie said it best 27 years ago. And Richie's like, what? I don't want to fucking die? And he's like, no, the other thing, man, the other thing. And he's like, I hate you? And he's like, no, the other thing. And he's like, let's kill this fucking clown. And they're like, yeah. And he's like, let's kill this fucking clown. It's so funny. Like, the way they shoot it and they like pushes in on Bill Hader's face is hysterical. I love that scene. That's one of my favorite moments.
My still number one, like I said earlier, that scene with Bill Hader when he gets hit by the deadlights, that is just like perfection to me.
It's funny. Yeah, it's really funny.
It's great.
And then he starts floating.
Yeah, and it's genuinely scary, like, too. Like, you're like, oh, damn, like, is he gonna, I don't know what's gonna happen.
Yeah, yeah. RB3, do you have anything in this movie that you like? Any scene?
Well, I mean, yeah, like the grandma scaring scene.
You just said the
tall dude scene with Bill Hader,
Paul Bunyan.
So those scenes, I mean, that's probably where that ends though. So,
oh damn, that's hardcore, man.
I'm sorry.
I love Pennywise's jabs at each one of them. The fact that he goes after them. I think the way Bill does it and the way he portrays it is so different and unique and original. The way he attacks each and every one of them is crazy. It's to me, there's so much in this film that I really enjoy. Obviously, again, it's a very long film. It's definitely not for everyone. It's not as accessible as the first one, like we said. But I still really enjoy it, especially when it comes full circle at the end. And Stephen King's like biggest cameo ever. I mean, that's a long cameo. It's definitely funny though.
Yeah, there's a lot of great moments in this one. It's exactly what you said though. If you enjoy the first one, you might be able to enjoy this one because there's so much with like the children in it and stuff. So that's all really enjoyable. But you have to also understand like how it's like super zany and crazy and out there.
Yes.
And it's, even though it's a horror film, it's not necessarily, neither of these films are both 100% scary. There are those light moments. There are like the more comedic moments, the heavier moments, the moving moments. There's so many pieces of this puzzle that I feel like work together so beautifully to like lend itself from the book to the screen. Like there's, everything had to work in some type of harmony. And the second one is where it goes a little off the rails, but I'm still here for it. Andres is still here for it. And I understand where RB3 is coming from. Yes. I get it.
Yeah, definitely not for it's, I mean, I had to come like a come to Jesus moment in the film, like 30, 40 minutes in where I was like, is this the same filmmaker? Because this is like a horror comedy. It's funny though. And that's why I kind of embraced it where I was like, if it wasn't working, like if it wasn't Bill Hader, if it was another actor and the one-liners weren't hitting, I would have been like, oh, this isn't working. But the fact that it's Bill Hader and it's effing hysterical, it worked for me. I was like, oh, this is like a horror comedy. It's funny. When Richie's like, let's talk about the elephant in the room or the not elephant in the room. What happened, Ben? It's stuff like that where it's like, it's just funny to me and it's goofy. All the one-liners that Richie has and all the moments that they have together. It's that perfect horror comedy, right? Where it's horror comedy, but it still has a lot of themes, a lot of messages, and a lot of moments that are very serious and very dark and very dramatic, and for dramatic purposes, which is why I really enjoyed it. So also, we never mentioned this, but the fact that there was a few articles that were written out about how Pennywise kind of betrayed the LGBT community or something like that. I don't know if you guys saw that.
I don't know.
They were like, Pennywise isn't the woke king, that the woke gay king we thought he was. And I'm like, no shit. He's supposed to be fucking evil. Like, what did you guys expect?
No,
that was a joke about the first film. And people took it so seriously to the point that it's like, oh, he hates gay people. And I'm like, yeah, he's supposed to be evil, dude. Like,
first of all, he just kills people and he's not even a human. He's a celestial being. So he has no opinion about our human affairs that happen.
Yeah, but you saw that, right? I'm not the only one who saw that. Okay.
No, people after the first film made him and the Babadook like the icons.
Yes.
And then they
felt so betrayed in the second one as if he was like actually like a woke king. I was like, you guys so stupid. Like it's supposed to be evil.
I have no idea where like the internet and Twitter and memes happen. Like all this stuff is like crazy. There's like fan cams of Pennywise. It's hilarious to me, but it shows that another thing about these two films, and like these are basically my closing thoughts, are it made such a splash in pop culture. It genuinely did. When it comes to, like we said, like Halloween costumes, Halloween decorations, I already got a ton of stuff from Party City that's all like it related. And like the quotes, I think it brought it to a whole new generation, because I think our generation, mine and like RB3's and yours as well, Andres, like we were like the last ones that remembered the miniseries. Nobody younger than us cares about the miniseries. So yeah,
well, the miniseries was my generation. I think it was like 93, which is like right when I was.
But because of my parents, like I still watched it. I watched it when I was really little. But I think anybody younger than myself, like they just wouldn't care to watch something like that because it did not age well. So, you know, we have this new iteration. It's introducing this story and this character to new generations. People that have never probably even heard of Tim Curry's Pennywise, maybe they could go revisit it and see something different. And this could introduce them to more work. This could introduce them to Stephen King. It's really crazy how this film, I had no idea. I remember they built the little Niebolt house in Hollywood.
Yeah. And then
before, and I went.
On the way.
Yeah. It was so much fun, and that was before the movie came out, I believe. I believe it was before the movie came out, or it was like a year after. I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
If I'm being honest, I think it was it for It Chapter 2. Right?
No, it was definitely one. I was a sophomore in college. No, it was for It Chapter 1. Yeah. I think it was in like, because I was still working. I remember the exact day that
because I would drive by it going to work. I remember that.
Yeah, I was a sophomore in college, and I was working at this marketing place in downtown. And I remember leaving work, I was so excited. I got dressed up in like 80s nostalgia type of clothes, and I was beyond pumped. And it was such a cool experience because they had people walking around, they had the little Georgies, and then it was awesome just how far they went with that, and people just really attached themselves. But at that time, since it was before it came out, I did not realize that this would become the highest grossing horror film of all time. Like that is just crazy to me. And its impact is still felt. Like people still celebrate and enjoy these movies, even though the second one is a lot more divisive.
Yeah. The thing that stood out to me, RB3, and we talked about it when we talked a little bit about Andy Muschietti years ago on a podcast, is the idea of the cultural, everything Sabrina said, the cultural aspect of this film, the fact that it did identify to so many people who Pennywise is and what these movies were, the fact that it reached audiences like Latino audiences, like Black audiences, and that it reached meme culture. I mean, the fact that NBA players were dressing up as Pennywise, I think LeBron did a couple of years ago. Like the fact that so many Mexican homies of mine were like, yo, fool, like Pennywise don't fuck around, dude. Like, he's crazy, fool. Like, the fact that, like, that was, like, so many, like, Latinos were watching this movie kind of stood out to me. Like, it really did. I was like, oh, like, that doesn't always happen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just a general mainstream, like, hit. You know what I mean? It just hit a lot of audiences in a lot of different ways. And there's something in there for everybody. I know, particularly from my personal experience, though, whenever I see horror movies, it's always Black and brown people in the theater. No matter what. So, and they're usually the highest demographics when it comes to a lot of that stuff.
It is. Yeah. When I saw Don't Breathe and when I saw some other horror films, I forget which ones, it was all Latino audiences, like literally all Latino and all African-American audiences. It was kind of remarkable, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, shout out to that. Obviously, that to me stands out quite a bit, considering that, again, the representation thing is always going to be a big deal to me. But either way, I really love both these films. I love the themes that they hit on. I love the fact that they identify, they explain things, and they do it in a metaphorical way of like the embodiment of evil, which I think is so effective, which is why I really enjoy both of these films. Any final thoughts, RB3?
I mean, you know, again, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it. So
damn, bro,
stand away from it.
Dang, bro, such a hater, bro. I'm just playing. Either way, guys, those are our thoughts on It Chapter 1 and 2. You're probably not gonna agree with us all the way through, or if you can, you might agree with RB3 more than you agree with me. It's all good in the hood. You can let us know in the comments down below. Subscribe to First Cut if you haven't done so already, and follow us on social media at First Cut TMO. You can follow me, Squad Leader Ace.
You can follow me at Director RB3.
You can follow me at Sabrina X Monica, and then also on Twitter at Sabrina on Film.
For the Meaning of Podcast, I'm Andres.
This is RB3.
I'm Sabrina.
And we're peacing out. Peace.